Welcome back, and now we're going to continue on the Babylon.js WebGL by reviewing some cool stuff around picking, physics, stuff like that. So we are still the two Davids, and we're going to share our passion about 3D, what we've done inside Babylon.js, and you can touch us on our Twitter account. So we are now on the third part of the day two, so it's about advanced features, and we've got in Babylon.js. So rather than spending too much time explaining the features, let's have a quick teasing demos of what we will be able to build at the end of this module. So let's go to my desktop, OpenIE, and I've got this cool SPDit scene. So I've been loading using the classical approach we've seen in the previous modules. And after pressing the S key, you can see that there are some ball falling. And with physics enabled, I can even shoot the ball with my mouse by pressing the left button of my mouse. I can also have some boxes with the B touch keys, and I can send many, many balls with any performance issues and playing with that. I can spend hours playing with that. It's pretty cool. And to be able to have that, you need to have a lot of different features, the collision one set up for the camera and the physics. And we'll be going to see how to do that in a near future, in a couple of minutes.
I love this demo, sincerely.
But rather than doing that, I'm going to ask David to share the agenda with us.
Absolutely.
For 45 minutes.
Yeah, so it will be a pretty solid chapter. We have five topics this time, and the very first one will be about picking a mesh. This is really important. You want to know what is under your mouse, for instance, to interact with it, like you did just right now. When you click on the ball, you use the picking system. Then we also talk about how you can create your own shader. The standard material is a really powerful shader. We call it the Uber shader, meaning that it can handle a lot of things, but perhaps you want to do things differently, like, for instance, Ubisoft did with the water. So we will talk about that. Then I will also spend some time with you guys talking about animations and how we can use animation into the Babylon.js engine. And then David will present us how to create this kind of scene, how to add physics into a real-life scene. And finally, I will talk with you about something really interesting created by a member of our community, the CSG, which stands for Constructive Solid Geometries. We will see a lot of really interesting things. So let's start with the very first one, how to pick a mesh.
Yes.
So there are really two interesting tools for that. The very first one is the method that you can find, a function that you can find on the scene. By calling pick on the scene, you can get an object, a pick result object, that will be generated for you at the given 2D coordinate. So you just have to give the mouse coordinate, for instance, and automatically, 3D in Babylon.js will launch for you a ray through all the scene and will find for you which mesh is under the mouse. And it will give you some interesting information, like if there is an object, what's the name of this object, where in this object the pick has happened, etc., etc. We can also use some interesting feature like a predicate. For instance, you don't want to go through all the objects in your scene. You just want to, for instance, pick only balls, like in your case. I just want to pick the balls in the box. So you can give to the picking engine a predicate, a function, that let the system know which mesh do you want to pick. And finally, there is also a way by giving callback to the scene.onPointerDown property, you will be called by the system, by Babylon.js engine, each time the user click on the canvas. Okay? So, the best idea here is to have a look on how it works. So, I have a really simple scene. Each time I'm saying that, but that's the truth, it's a really simple scene. I have a scene, I have a light, and I have a free camera. The free camera is attached to the canvas. I want to move an impact. I mean, I want to click on an object and I want to move the impact object where I clicked, okay? So it sounds like when I shoot with my weapon, I just shoot, the bullet is launched, and I would like to add some kind of impact where the bullet touch my object. So I have a wall here. It's just a plane with a regular material. And you can see there is some emissive color to define it. It's almost green. I also have my impact object, which should be red. Okay, let's use an emissive color instead of diffuse color. So we will see each time, no need for light in this case. And I just want to render that. So just like this, my scene looks like that. I have my wall, which is green, and I have a small impact object on the center of my scene. And what I want to do is when I click or when I touch, I want to move my impact, right, where I clicked. How I can do that? There is two ways to do that. The very first one could be to use the pick, or I can just ask the scene to call me when a pointer is a pencil, is a mouse, or is your touch, your finger. So every time a pointer is pushed on the canvas, I want to call this function. This function will have two parameters, the event itself, raised by the canvas, and I also will receive a pick result object, all right? So using this pick result object, I will have a lot of information. For instance, if there is no pick result, if there is no hit, if nothing was picked, then the hit property will be false, okay? So if there is a hit, if something was found, then I would like to do something. And for instance, my impact object, I just want to move my impact object where the impact itself has occurred. Okay. Yep, absolutely. And this information is in the pick result object, just here. We have a property called picked point, which is a 3D point, and I just want to move on the X and Y axis. I want to keep the Z constant, so I'm sure I will be on the wall. That's it. Just by doing that, when I click, as you can see, my impact is moving. And it's not just about 2D, because I can be like that, and look, it's still working.
Yes.
And obviously, I can also use my finger. You can see that my mouse is not moving.
And this is something fairly complex to do, honestly, if you're not used to that, to send the ray and do the hit collision. So this is giving it to you for free in the two lines of code, so pretty easy.
Yeah. So I can do exactly the same thing if I want using the pick function. So instead of waiting for a mouse event to happen, I can just launch a pick. For instance, when I move my hand or whatever, I just can raise myself a pick. Here, the pick is already raised for me by the scene itself. Okay? You can also create your own rays if you want. That's a really interesting point because let's imagine you want to do something like, I want a sphere to move on my ground, but to always remain on the ground. If we are using something like create ground from 8-map, the ground is not flat, okay? I can use your head, for instance, it was a so wonderful example, and I will have some really interesting volume, yeah? But I want to be sure that the sphere is rolling where the ground is.
So it's for following that, the geometry.
Yeah, I want the sphere to follow the geometry. Yeah. To do that, I will have to launch a ray, a vertical ray, to find where is the ground, okay? So let's have a look to this specific demonstration. Just before that, I forgot to mention something. Let me go back to this example here. I still have the same story as I mentioned before, but what I want to do here is to play with an object, and I want to play with the pick result because I want to show you that we can remove object from the list of objects that the scene can request for picking. I'm not sure this is really clear. So let's just create a sphere. So it's a babylon.mesh.createSphere. So nothing really special here. This is a sphere. And I want some tessellation, regular radius, and it will be added to the scene itself. All right? Then if I just run this code, you see that the sphere here, okay, it's not really visible. I will change something like adding a red emissive color to the impact itself and also to the sphere. Interesting point here. We can share material between objects. There is no issue with that. Okay. So if I run that again, all right. So as you can see here, I have my sphere and I want to be able to click anywhere to define the impact, even if I click where the sphere is, right? But if I don't do anything else than just requesting a peak, the problem will be that I won't touch the wall itself, I will touch the sphere, right?
Okay.
So let's just try to do something like this. What I can do is, instead of waiting for the scene to rise on pointer up or down, I just want to be called on every frame. You remember that? I can use an anonymous function. This anonymous function will be called for me on every frame. That's perfect. I want to call and get a peak result by using scene.peak, okay? I want to peak, and I want to peak where is the pointer. So this is a really handy property we have on the scene. The scene can let you know where is the pointer. Even if the pointer is a pencil, a mouse, or your finger, that's okay. So scene.pointer y, okay? And if I just do that, okay, I can do exactly what I did before. Let me copy paste from the previous result. I can do that. You're okay with me? Mm-hmm. If I find something that's perfectly cool, I can move and some. There is some, as you can see, things are not working very well because...
You should put a higher radius to the sphere, maybe?
I can do that, yes, because...
because this is not very clear.
This is not very clear. Yeah, and it's not even very clear in this way.
Let's yes, the fact is when you're going through the sphere, it's going to be it. And you don't want that, that's right.
Absolutely. So let's just move the visibility of the sphere to 0.5. It will be far easier. As you can see, I move here and the object is not under my mouse. Every time it's under my mouse, but here it remains, it's some kind of weird things because we are touching the sphere and the position of the point is on the sphere itself.
Okay. Okay. So you want to go through the sphere?
Yes. And I can even amplify that by also getting the Z. So we will see the impact moving on the sphere itself. So this is working very well and you can see that's not obvious, right? No, that's not obvious.
But you're currently moving on top of
absolutely. This. Yeah, we have no shadows. So we don't feel the volume here, but the object is moving on the sphere. What I want to just to let you know is that you can add here a predicate. This predicate will give you a mesh, and you just have to say, hey, I don't want this mesh, or okay, I want this mesh, all right? Mm-hmm. This is pretty simple. I just have to say, okay, I want this mesh only if mesh.name, for instance, equal to wall. Hmm. Yeah, let's change that just by adding a little bit here. I don't know where is the camera. Yes, it's removing a little bit. Sorry about that. I can remember where the camera is. Okay, so as you can see, while I'm moving, my impact is always under my camera because each time I do a request for a peak operation, only the wall is used. So that's pretty simple to do. And going back to my other point, I have here something that I want to show you. Just let me comment that for now. Okay. And as you can see, I didn't use your picture. I'm sorry about that, David. But I have a sphere rotating around. Okay. What I want to do is to have my sphere, but always following the volume itself.
Stick okay? to the ground, okay.
Absolutely. I want it to stick to the ground. So what I'm doing right now on my scene, I register a before render function and I say, okay, the X and the Z are just based on the circle rotation, no problem with that. And the angle is moving. The problem I have is that where is the Y? Mm. Okay. If the object was just a flat plane, that was not a problem. I can take the same Z.
So you need to compute the Y.
Yeah, I need to launch. I need to cast a ray. That's exactly what I want to do in here. I need to cast a ray, and using this ray, I want to say, hey, ray, please check intersection with the ground. I will get a peak info. If there is a need, I know that the peak info dot peak at point, which was the point where the ray intersect with the ground, mm-hmm. I know that this point, the Y, is the 8 where I want to put my sphere. Okay. To do that, that's perfectly simple. I create a ray. I launch this ray. So when you create a ray, you have to specify two values. The very first one is the origin. The second one is the direction. So the direction is obvious. Because we have the Y going up, we then just want to go down. Okay. So it's 0, less 1, 0. So you go down. And so this is for the direction. And for the origin, we are just taking sphere.position.x, okay? sphere.position.z. And for the y, just to be sure that we are not under the ground, we can ask the ground to give us the bounding box, so the box which is surrounding the mesh itself, to get the y of this box. So we are pretty sure that the y of this box is, because the box is surrounding the ground itself, we know that the y of this box is on top of all the ground itself.
And finally,
so we have the ray. We just cast the ray. We get some information about the object itself, because right now the object can move. Okay, so we have to address that. I don't want to go deeper in here. And then just say, hey, please intersect that ray with my ground. If there is an intersection, just give me your y. I just add 0.5 because my sphere has a diameter of 1. And look that. Oh, this is the debug issue. Let me just launch IE without debug information. Yeah. As you can see, the ball is perfectly following the ground. And on every frame, I launch a ray to know where is the right height.
Okay.
And it's perfectly well. It's working perfectly well. So if you want to create a game where there is a tank running on some ground and you want your tank to stick on the world, that's perfectly the way to do that. All right.
So
this was for the picking operations.
So I'm afraid we won't have much time to go in detail for every of
the features. I agree with you. So the next one will be about how to create your own shader, how to create your own material. So to do that, we have a new we used to use the standard material, right? And right now we can use the shader material. The shader material is a tool that allows you to specify your shader, but everything else will be handled for you, okay? It's based on GLSL shaders. You just have to provide the vertex shader code and the pixel shader code. Remember, the pixel shader or the fragment shader.
So this is low level?
It's not high level, but it's not really low level. It's pretty simple to use. Honestly.
Medium level.
Medium level, let's say. That's perfect. Okay, so let's have a look at this demonstration. Here I have vertex shader. Remember what we did with WebGL. This is exactly the kind of code we can have with a position and UV. Just that. A matrix. And some operation I'm doing here. I won't go deeper in that. I know that you don't like that. I have also my fragment or my pixel shader here. And from Babylon.js point of view, this is always the same story. A canvas, an engine, a scene, a camera. I attach the camera, I create a sphere. But this time, the sphere will have a material, which is not the regular standard material, but this time, it's a shader material. A shader material needs a name, a scene, and some information about where to find the vertex shader and the pixel shader. So I letting him know that the vertex element, the name of the vertex element is vector shader code. Look. This is the ID of my vertex shader. Mm-hmm. Same story with the fragment shader. And then I just say, okay, there will be a variable called texture sample, which is just there, as you can see. We can communicate easily without having to deal with buffer and things like that,
okay,
just by calling set texture, set vector.
That's
three.
Why you're saying that it's medium level.
Yeah, because we don't have to deal with parameters and things like that. You just have to say, okay, here is the code. In this code, there are some parameters. For instance, here I have a texture sampler, which is a parameter. I also have a parameter which is wall view projection. And I can call specifically for every parameter a set texture, set vector 3, so set color 3. It's pretty easy to use.
So this is less verbose than pure WebGL code.
Absolutely. Okay. If just that code. honestly. And because this one is a well-known name, if you call wall, view projection, or fixed line that, Babylon.js take care of that for you. You don't even have to fill the specific variable. We just have to specify the texture sampler and that's it. And obviously the sphere, I will affect this material. My run the loop, I just make my sphere rotating a bit, and that's it.
Okay.
And I can play with my shader if I want. Let's say, hey, I want to, for instance, not use that, but multiply it by 5.0. So just by doing that, I can refresh here.
Okay.
So I can do whatever.
You can finally control how the shader is being applied to the mesh.
Absolutely. And with a very simple object to do that. You just have to know how to create a shader. And that's why we created for you guys something that we call the create your own shaders. So let's go to babylonjs.com/CYOS, hoping that the network will be with us. That's not really obvious right now.
So stay calm.
We just have to wait. You can see that Babylon.js is still working. No problem with that. Okay, we find a way to the new site. Okay. In the meantime, let me move to the slide so we can parallelize things. What's CYOS? CYOS is like the playground of the shaders. This is exactly the same experience. You have a way to create shaders and understand how they are working by experimenting. Everything is about experimenting. You will have a list of already defined shaders that you can play with, and on the right part of the screen, you will have the rendering, a live rendering, of your current shaders. So let me hope that, yeah, we are online. Great. So look, I love this one. It's what we call spherical environmental mapping. And to do that, yeah, it's not easy to say. And to do that, we just need these two shaders. But just going back to more simple shaders. This one is pretty simple. I need a position and UV from the mesh itself. I need a wall view projection. And as you can see, I can just map things on my object. I can change the object using the ground. No, the ground is not here. I can also play with a torus. My favorite, obviously, is the knot. Going more complicated, we can also define what we call black and white by doing some operation on the color that we are reading and blah, blah, blah. There are a lot of them. One of my favorite is the Fresnel one. Looks like X-ray, right? And you always have the way to compile and to save. That's the same story. You can
like
save.
The playground.
Absolutely. And share with a friend. If I click on here, a new URL is defined for you, and you can just share that with your friends. Okay?
So the idea is people can learn how to build shader on our website. So it's classical GLSL shaders.
Absolutely.
So you can even go on the web and search for shaders, put that in our tool, and check if it's working for Babylon.js, and then use your own shader in your game using Babylon.js. Pretty cool.
You can do that. You are not forced to do that. If you don't want to mess with shader, there is no issue with that. You can just stick with the standard material. A lot of properties of the standard material await you. But if you want to go deeper and just create your own specific rendering stuff, just play with the CYOS. So let's go back to the slide, and we will talk about animations. We already seen animation, to be honest. We already talked about that because we already played with the register before render. Mm-hmm. Nothing really new here. The register before render is a tool that allows you to be called on every frame. Just one simple int here. Instead of adding some const value when you want to animate things, like sphere.rotation.y plus equal something, you can use the scene.getAnimationRatio. Let me show you what I want to say just here. This is exactly the same code that I used before with the ground and the sphere. The only difference is before I did something like that. On every frame, I add a small value to my angle. But that's not really fair, because if the scene is not running at 60 frames per second constantly, then the animation won't be smooth, because during 1 minute, for instance, you will be at 60 frames per second, but it can be a drop because you halt tab or something is happening on your computer, and then the animation will not be fluid, right? To go against that, this is extremely simple. You just have to ask the scene for the animation ratio. The scene is constantly computing this value based on the current frame rate. So if you are running at 60 frames per second, this value is 1. But if you're not at 60 frames per second, this ratio will go bigger to compensate the lost, the frame lost. That's pretty simple. So obviously, I can do that. Nothing changed. Okay, and this is interesting. As you can see, it's running faster than before because I'm not at 60 frames per second. I'm at 30 because I'm running in debug mode right now. So the animation ratio is 2.
Okay.
Compensating the fact that if I run the exact same scene without debug, I will run at 60 frames per second and the animation ratio will be 1, but the sphere will go at the same speed.
The idea is, just imagine that you are lucky enough to have a strong machine. It shouldn't be fair that you have some better experience for the gaming that moving faster than the people have a small card. So to compensate that, we try to speed up the object on every frame to have people having small computer playing with people having big computers.
Absolutely. This is exactly the same speed when you're watching the game, in fact. All right. So, but there are also another way to do animations. It's automatic animations. Animation engine is already baked into the scene itself. I mean, the scene can control, based on a lot of information, how to interpolate between one value and another. And obviously, it will use the animation ratio, and it will allow you to specify keyframe. So how to do that? That's pretty simple also. Remember, I still have my scene with my animation and the ground and things like that, and I keep manually animating my sphere. But I also want to... I'm not on the right Visual Studio, that's why. But I want also to animate the scaling of my sphere. Okay? To do that, I create a Babylon animation. I give it a name. So I want to animate the scaling at 60 frames per second. The animation will be about a vector 3, the scaling itself, and it will be on loop mode. Okay, so once the animation is finished, it will restart automatically.
It's in infinite mode.
Absolutely. I then have to create what we are calling keyframe. So on frame 0, the value will be that. On frame 50, the value will be that. On frame 100, the value will be that. And because this is there is a loop, then everything will continue.
So it should have to go from 0 to 100?
Yeah, absolutely. It's about percentage.
Okay.
So at 50% and 100%. Then my animation that I just created before, I set the keys. I push this animation to the animation collection of the sphere. And I just have to call scene.beginAnimation on my sphere. The interesting thing is that I can animate a lot of things like that. I can animate anything, in fact. I just have to create animation, set keys, and add this animation to the animations collection of, for instance, my sphere here. And everything will be handled for you automatically by the scene.
For instance, the V6 engine of Michel was using this.
Absolutely. Yeah, the V6 engine itself is just about animation created into 3ds Max and exporting this way. There is no manual animation in the V6 engine. And as you can see here, my sphere is moving always along the same path, but right now we can see that its size is changing from 1 to 4, 1.
So you can mix both.
Absolutely.
Approach.
Yeah, okay. It depends mainly on what you want to do and how you want to control your code. All right. I know there are a lot of information in this chapter, and right now, moving to something completely different, physics.
Okay, so let's now see how to build the first scene we've seen together. So using the physics engine.
I'm not on my
desk, no problem, David. So on, I'm taking control of the slide, and now you can see that we've got two physics engines available in Babylon.js via a plugin system, which means that you can build your own plugin system to inject your own physics engine in our 3D engine if you want to. By default, we are based on Oimo.js, but we have also support for Canon.js. You must pay attention to the fact that it's absolutely uncorrelated from the native collision engine, so most of the people are mixing that, which is fairly understandable, but the collision system is based on the camera that shouldn't go through the walls. This is basically that, or through the floor, or whatever meshes. And the physics engine is really about bringing life to things and objects between them, objects with gravity, and to apply some force on an object using the picking mechanism. So this is something uncorrelated, so pay attention to that. And to enable the physics engine, you've got to enable that on the scene itself. So you've got an enable physics function. You've got to specify the vector of the gravity, so minus 10 that's going to go down, and then to specify which physics engine you'd like to use. Once you've done that, you've got also to choose the right impostors for your mesh. For instance, when you're creating physics stuff, you've got to specify what is the box around the mesh itself. So it could be a sphere, for instance, if the object is very similar to a sphere. It could be a box, it could be a plane, or it could be a compound impostor. No, we won't see that during this demonstration. But if you're thinking about more complex engine like a mesh impostor, we still don't have support for that. It costs a lot of performance, in fact, so we're still working on that. So still using these three type of impostor, which already can have some fun. So the idea is to set some physics state on the specific mesh by using the set physics states function and choosing the right impostor and set some properties. Once you're done that, the way to enable the physics effects on your meshes is to let the gravity doing its job. So if you're putting a ball at a specific height and activate the gravity on it, it would fall and bounce on the floor. If you set some physics state between two meshes and they're going to collide each other, they will bounce again and react like they should be in a real world. And finally, you can apply some force on a specific mesh, for instance, using the picking. So I'm going to pick a ball and push it using the mouse. So to do that, you've got an apply impulse function that you should apply to the mesh. So let's try to understand how this is working with the great demonstration I've prepared. Let's hope so, you will like it. So
you this need is your favorite. I know this is your favorite.
No, yes, this is my favorite. So the first thing that you need, our 3D engine, the stuff for the touch if you need to, and the 3D engine, the physics engine itself, which is also an open source engine. You can download on GitHub, and you will find it also on GitHub itself. So once you've done that, you need to load the scene. So I'm going to load the SPD scene we've already seen in the past. Once I've loaded it, I need to enable the physics on it, like we've just seen. And I'm going to use the OIMOP.js plugin. And then I'm going to create some materials. So the materials is just using the very same Amiga material we've been using. I know you're really fan of Amiga.
Absolutely.
And I am a fan of Atari, so we're spending a lot of time fighting together about that. And we've got also the wood material that we're going to put on the queue. Okay, once we've done that, we need to listen to some specific action. We're going to see what. And by default, let's launch the scene. So when it's doing that, it's just prepare everything to let me copy-paste the URL. So just remind me not to close the browser.
Please do not close the browser.
Thank you. And you see that I can go through the wall, okay? Because there is a collider here defined.
Yeah, which is not related to physics. That's no. Really important.
And I can go here, even if there are some spaces. The designer chose to put a big box around that to avoid letting me to go through that, just because it was the way it's been thinking about the scene itself. So I just have to run through the whole scene and find where the collider are. This is some invisible collider. For instance, I can't go neither here, even if I could go, because there is a big collider over there. So the first step you need to do is to understand where these colliders are. So to do that, I've just created a simple JavaScript code that's going to go through all the collider and create some list items. And when I'm clicking them, I will enable the visibility or enable the physics on them. Okay? So now let's control F5. This is some very awful UI. Don't be surprised. I'm still a developer. So for instance, if I'm activating this one, you can see this is an invisible box that avoids me to go through the wall. Same story for this one, so I know them by heart. You see, I can go over because this is a very small collider. Now let's imagine I'm going to transform all that to physics. Okay. To do that, I need just this simple loop. So I'm going to go on every meshes on my scene, check if it's enabled for collision, and check if it's not visible. If it's the case, it's probably an invisible collider to be used for the collision engine, and I'm going to transfer them for the physics engine by using a box imposter, because almost all of them are boxes. Then I'm going to set some mass so they shouldn't move at all, so they are zero. And then the friction and restitution, which is some property of the physics engine. Once I've done that, I'm putting that in a specific array to let me play with the UI, just for that, okay? Once I've done that, now I've got everything set up to launch some balls and box in my scene. So I've got some key code I'm listening to. So if I'm pressing S, what I'm going to do, I'm going to create 25 sphere using the Amiga material. I'm going to put them in a specific area I've tried in my scene. I know that in this specific area there is some room to create some sphere. And I'm going to create a physics sphere using the sphere imposter, using a mass of 1. And when I'm pressing B, I'm going to do the exact same thing using boxes and a box imposter. And you see that the mass of the box are really heavy, which means that it's going to be more difficult to move them. Once I've done that, let's go back to the scene. If I'm pressing S, so there is some sphere falling, B, some boxes, and I can put a lot of them. And if I'm, for instance, removing physics on this part, you can see now the ball can go through this specific collider because I've deactivated, so I can reactivate it, and now they have just jumping around the wall. So you can control everything you want. You can see I can inactivate that, and now the ball will go through. So you have to choose which part of the scene are physics enabled or not. So it's really, really fun. And then the final part is if I'm clicking on the ball, I want it to fall away. So to do that, we're going to use the beautiful picking system you've been talking about at the beginning. So this is not here. This is over there. So when I'm going to do a mouse down, so it would be better with a point pointer down, I guess. Well, what I'm going to do is to pick to launch a ray. If I've got something that is called sphere zero something or box zero, I want to try to move it by doing a simple things is to do an apply impulse to launch some forces against this specific mesh. Now, thanks to that, I'm listening to the mesh down, coming back. If I'm clicking it, you see, I can launch a ball far away. If I'm trying to do it on the box, it's a bit more difficult because it's heavier. It's a mass of 4 rather than the mass of 1 for the balls. And here it is, you can play during hours. I've already spent at least 3 hours playing this stupid game, which is not really a game, but I don't know why physics things are really captivating.
Yeah, it sounds like the new Angry Bird.
Maybe, let's hope so. So this is pretty simple to use, and you can have a lot of fun using it, and a lot of good games are built using physics engine. So, and this is the last part we got to talk about, is the CSG.
Absolutely. So CSG stands for Constructive Solid Geometries. It was something that I really appreciate because it was not developed by us. It's extremely rare when we are talking about Babylon.js. It was developed by a member of our community. And it was a port of something that you can find on the wiki right here, the Constructive Solid Geometry. The idea is to be able to combine or subtract meshes between them. So you can create new kind of object based on, for instance, A minus B or A union C, etc., etc. But let me show you how it works. So here we are. We have a standard demo, a scene, a light, a camera. I think we understand that right now. I have my attach control, something a bit new. I define the ambient color. The ambient color is the color applied to all objects everywhere in the scene. So I just want to be sure that there is no dark object, just to add a bit of new features. There are so many features. So I'm creating also a standard material. This material will be displayed with wireframe, no backface curling, so I will be able to see backfaces. And I create A, which is a sphere, B, which is a box, and C, which is a box. All right? A is a sphere, B and C are boxes. Okay. They all have the same material, and I will move them in my scene, and just to show you. Let's start that right here. So, A, B, and C. Okay? Mm-hmm. Simple. Then, I create two materials, mat 0, mat 1. Mat 0 is based on something which is almost red, and mat 1 is almost green, okay? And let me define some solid geometry for A, B, and C. So A, C, A, G, B, C, A, G, and C, C, A, G are a lot of tools that I will use to do some operation between my meshes, okay? For instance, let's have a look at this specific one. This one is B, the box, subtracted by A,
the sphere. Okay.
Yep. The new mesh, each time you do that, you just have to call two mesh, and it will generate for you a new mesh, and it will apply a material, so the red one in. And I just move the new object somewhere in the scene. Okay? The box where I subtracted the sphere. So it's a really cool tool.
Yeah, very funny.
It's extremely funny, absolutely. Then, new example. This time, the sphere where I subtracted the box. Okay? The opposite.
Okay.
With the same material, zero. The red one. Okay? So we just have the remaining part. My sphere, but we removed.
Yes, it's been cut.
Yeah, absolutely. Pretty interesting. Then, we can also do intersection. So just keep the common part between the sphere and the box. And it's here. And as you can see, this is pretty interesting because we can add that, and this is a sphere. Really, really cool. So, but we can even go further if we want. For instance, let me create a multimat. Remember multimat? It's a way to gather materials between among them just to apply one single multimat to a specific object, okay? So here is a new Babylon dot multimaterial, okay? The name of this material will be a multi, that's perfectly fine. And what I want to do is just use the scene itself, okay? So what I want to put on my material, I want to push on submaterials. I want to add two submaterials, mat 0 and mat 1. Okay, so multimat is just the gathering of mat 0 and mat 1. Mat 0 would be at index 0, and mat 1 will be at index 1. Pretty easy. Then, what I can do is just create a new sub-CSG. So, let's do something like that. This time, I want to subtract B and C. Okay? So, remember, there is two boxes, but one was rotated a bit, so I want to remove the rotated one from the regular one.
Okay.
Okay? And what I want to do here is say, okay, this time we will use a multi-material, and please, for every involved mesh, give them a part of this multi-material. I mean, every time you keep the first object, apply the first material. Every time you keep the second one, apply the second material, so we can see which part remains, okay? That's pretty interesting.
I'm curious of the results.
And let's move it to less disto. Let me check that I don't do anything wrong. I want my multimat on the scene. We want to apply multimaterial. Sounds like it's good, so let's do that here. As you can see, I subtracted the very first one and the second here, you see? So we can just keep.
So there is only the green parts that's remaining from one of the
boxes. Absolutely. But I can do that differently. Let me change something. Instead of intersect, it will be easier to use subtract. It will be far easier to understand.
Okay, look. Now we understand.
Yeah. So the interior part is from the second one, and the exterior is from the first one. We can see that by using multimat, we can even play with the combination of my meshes.
It could be great to learn for young people how to interact different geometry.
Exactly. And it could be even used by games. For instance, if you want to create some kind of Lego games or things like that, if there is a remaining part when you do a substraction or an intersection that you're wrong because you have to put this object perfectly well. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of applications of this specific technology. I really love this one. This is really interesting. And you can create really cool objects by just merging simple shapes, by the way. So I think it's the end of what we have to cover in this specific chapter. If you want to go further, just here are some examples. The very first one is to allow you to create your own shaders and talk about 8 maps and skyboxes and things that we will address in the very last chapter. Picking collision, okay, it's pretty clear. If you want to play with that, we can go using this link. Animation also. David Oimo, how to use a new physics plugin. Yeah. Yep,
it's a great article that explains you how to create that. It's being done by someone for the community, Temenchon, that has done that, and he explained how we build the plugin system, so it's pretty cool.
Yes, interesting. And if you want to add your own physics engine, because the physics engine itself is a plugin, is based on a plugin system, so if you want to create, for instance, a plugin based on, a bullet, for instance, here is the documentation if you want to go this way. I think we reached the end.
Yes.
So let's have the final break before the latest chapter, and we will talk about that in a few minutes.
See you very soon.
See you very soon, guys.